Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver in Washington. On the show today, Pete Musto tells about some unusual beachgoers in Florida. Ashley Thompson and I take you to an island in the largest lake in the world. Then it's another American story. This week, Barbara Klein narrates A Pair of Silk Stockings by Kate Chopin. But first, we go to Brian Lynn.
Supporters of Edward Snowden have appealed to U.S. President Barack Obama to give him a pardon. The American Civil Liberties Union, Amnesty International, and Human Rights Watch launched a campaign in support of Snowden this week. Several business leaders and personalities have joined the cause. Snowden once worked as a contractor for the U.S. National Security Agency. The agency collects and studies information for the federal government. While at the NSA, Snowden provided details to the media of secret government programs for gathering intelligence. He showed for the first time that the NSA was secretly collecting information on the telephone calls of millions of U.S. citizens. The NSA has claimed the program was legal under the USA Patriot Act. Both houses of Congress passed the measure after the September 11 attacks on the United States. Snowden's actions resulted in the government bringing charges against him in June 2013. He was accused of stealing government property, illegally communicating national defense information, and illegally communicating secret intelligence information. If found guilty, he could spend up to 30 years in prison. The government's case is based on the belief that Snowden gave away national security secrets that could put the public in danger. Some of his supporters see him as an American activist who put his life at risk to bring attention to the secret NSA programs. Snowden currently lives in exile in Russia, which has offered him asylum. The Russian government has rejected U.S. requests to extradite him to the United States to face trial. The Obama administration has repeatedly stated that Snowden's actions were serious crimes. Administration spokesman Josh Earnest said the information harmed U.S. national security and put the American people at greater risk. Earnest also said that Snowden made a mistake by deciding to release the information to the media. Instead, the government believes he could have made his concerns known in a more responsible way. On Thursday, a U.S. congressional committee said that the material made public by Snowden caused tremendous damage to national security. The committee said its investigation makes clear that he handed over secrets that protect American troops overseas and secrets that provide vital defenses against terrorists and nation states. But others disagree. Dinah Pokempner is general counsel with Human Rights Watch. She told VOA that Snowden should not be considered a criminal.
It's a real problem with the way the U.S. handles people who expose wrongdoing, and it needs to be corrected. One of the best ways to start that process would be symbolic, but highly meaningful, and that would be to pardon Snowden.
Ben Wisner is with the American Civil Liberties Union. He is also a lawyer for Edward Snowden. He says the government has yet to provide any real evidence to support the charges.
There's been 3.5 years since the revelations began, and the government has had every opportunity and every incentive to come forward with specific and concrete evidence that there has been harm. And instead, we hear the same vague, speculative language about how these things damage national security.
President Obama can only approve a pardon before his term in office ends in January of next year. Wisner says he remains hopeful about the president acting, although the government has repeatedly said that Snowden should face the charges.
Something that may seem quite unlikely in September might seem just a bit more likely in December if millions of people around the world respond to this call and join our campaign.
I'm Brian Lynn.
Last Friday was an unusual day for several diplomats in the U.S. state of Florida. The U.S. Department of State gathered consular officers from Africa, Europe, and Latin America to pick garbage off the beach in Key Biscayne. Their efforts supported a program called the International Coastal Cleanup of Beaches. This program aims to clean garbage out of oceans and off beaches. The International Coastal Cleanup also tries to bring attention to the issue of pollution in the world's oceans. U.S. Department of State official Clifton Seagroves said protecting the world's oceans is very important.
We want to bring attention to pollution, microbeads, plastics, which causes problems for the whole world.
A 2015 Reuters News Service report stated scientists believe more than 9 million tons of garbage are in the world's oceans. Uruguay's consul, Lourdes Bonet, said she felt it was her duty to help with the efforts. A person continues to live in the place where he or she lives, she said, and they must return all that hospitality that has been received. Ecuador's consul, Eduardo Rivadeneira, praised the efforts to clean the beach. I had never come to this park, and I think it's spectacular, he said. Everyone is from all over the world sharing this great moment. The group was able to remove almost 550 kilograms of garbage from the Key Biscayne Beach by the end of the day. This same amount usually takes a week to remove. I'm Pete Musto.
This week on our National Parks Journey, we explore a remote island near Michigan's border with Canada. It sits within a huge freshwater lake. It is one of the least visited national parks in America. Welcome to Isle Royale National Park. Isle Royale is surrounded by the deep blue waters of Lake Superior, the largest freshwater lake on Earth by area. The park's quiet forests and rocky shores offer a kind of solitude and peace not found in some of the more popular national parks. No cars or other wheeled vehicles are permitted on Isle Royale. There are no real roads on the island. The only way to get to the park is by boat or seaplane. The National Park Service operates shuttle boats that take visitors to Isle Royale. The boats leave from two Michigan ports. The journey to Isle Royale takes 3 to 5 hours. Waters are often extremely rough.
Isle Royale is the largest of the islands within the national park. It is 72 kilometers long. The entire national park protects a total area of 230,000 hectares, including some 450 islands that surround Isle Royale. 52,000 hectares is land. The rest is water. Isle Royale became a national park in 1940. In 1980, officials named it an International Biosphere Reserve because of its unique ecosystem. Its remote location is part of what makes it among the least visited national parks. But once they arrive, most visitors stay a while. The average stay for visitors to Isle Royale National Park is 3.5 days. The average stay for visitors to most other national parks is just 4 hours.
Isle Royale offers hiking, camping, boating, and even scuba diving. The extremely cold waters of Lake Superior help keep shipwrecks in excellent condition. The National Park Service protects 11 sunken boats for divers to explore. They are reminders of Lake Superior's commercial shipping history. The sunken wooden ship called the America is one of the most popular dive sites. The America carried passengers, mail, and supplies to many towns along the shores of Lake Superior. It first launched in 1898 and was used until 1928 when it was damaged. It sank to the bottom of the lake soon after. Today, divers can swim through the ship's ballroom, bedrooms, and engine room. Painted on the ship's engine is an American flag. Many divers take pictures of this site.
The Rock Harbor Lighthouse is another reminder of the area's commercial history. Workers built the lighthouse in the 1850s to help guide ships safely to the island's copper mines. The mining industry was short-lived, however. The lighthouse itself lit the way for ships for just 24 years. But it still stands today. Inside, exhibits and information help visitors understand Isle Royale's maritime history. A short hiking trail leads visitors to the lighthouse. Visitors to Isle Royale share the trails with a well-studied population of moose and wolves. Both species migrated to the island sometime in the early to mid-1900s. Scientists believe that moose swam to the island. They think wolves walked there during a freeze of the lake sometime in the 1940s. Scientists have closely studied the relationship between Isle Royale's wolves and moose since the late 1950s. It is one of the best-studied predatory-prey relationships in the world. Researchers closely record their population numbers. Much of the research takes place during the winter, when the trees are bare. The researchers fly over the island to observe the animals from above.
In early 2016, researchers from Michigan Tech University observed just two remaining wolves on Isle Royale. The moose population, however, is growing. Scientists observed about 1,300 moose on the island this winter. Animal research is the only winter activity going on at Isle Royale. The national park is closed each year beginning in late October because of the harsh weather conditions. It reopens in springtime the next year. But for the other months of the year, Isle Royale offers refreshing lake breezes, green forests, and clear blue waters. Its stunning scenery and unusual solitude keep visitors returning year after year.
Now we hear the story, A Pair of Silk Stockings, by Kate Chopin.
Little Mrs. Summers one day found herself the unexpected owner of $15. It seemed to her a very large amount of money. The way it filled up her worn money holder gave her a feeling of importance that she had not enjoyed for years. The question of investment was one she considered carefully. For a day or two, she walked around in a dreamy state as she thought about her choices. She did not wish to act quickly and do anything she might regret. During the quiet hours of the night, she lay awake considering ideas. A dollar or two could be added to the price she usually paid for her daughter Janie's shoes. This would guarantee they would last a great deal longer than usual. She would buy cloth for new shirts for the boys. Her daughter Mag should have another dress. And still, there would be enough left for new stockings, 2 pairs per child. What time that would save her in always repairing old stockings! The idea of her little family looking fresh and new for once in their lives made her restless with excitement. The neighbors sometimes talked of the better days that little Miss Summers had known before she had ever thought of being Mrs. Summers. She herself never looked back to her younger days. She had no time to think about the past. The needs of the present took all her energy. Mrs. Summers knew the value of finding things for sale at reduced prices. She could stand for hours making her way, little by little, toward the desired object that was selling below cost. She could push her way if need be. But that day she was tired and a little bit weak. She had eaten a light meal. No, she thought about her day. Between getting the children fed and the house cleaned and preparing herself to go shopping, she had forgotten to eat at all. When she arrived at the large department store, she sat in front of an empty counter. She was trying to gather strength and courage to push through a mass of busy shoppers. She rested her hand upon the counter. She wore no gloves. She slowly grew aware that her hand had felt something very pleasant to touch. She looked down to see that her hand lay upon a pile of silk stockings. A sign nearby announced that they had been reduced in price. A young girl who stood behind the counter asked her if she wished to examine the silky leg coverings. She smiled as if she had been asked to inspect diamond jewelry with the aim of purchasing it. But she went on feeling the soft, costly items. Now she used both hands, holding the stockings up to see the light shine through them. Two red marks suddenly showed on her pale face. She looked up at the shop girl. "Do you think there are any size 8.5 among these?" There were a great number of stockings in her size. Mrs. Summers chose a black pair and looked at them closely. $1.98, she said aloud. "Well, I will buy this pair." She handed the girl a $5 bill and waited for her change and the wrapped box with the stockings. What a very small box it was! It seemed lost in her worn old shopping bag. Mrs. Summers then took the elevator, which carried her to an upper floor into the ladies' rest area. In an empty corner, she replaced her cotton stockings for the new silk ones. For the first time, she seemed to be taking a rest from the tiring act of thought. She had let herself be controlled by some machine-like force that directed her actions and freed her of responsibility. How good was the touch of the silk on her skin! She felt like lying back in the soft chair and enjoying the richness of it. She did for a little while. Then she put her shoes back on and put her old stockings into her bag. Next, she went to the shoe department, sat down, and waited to be fitted. The young shoe salesman was unable to guess about her background. He could not resolve her worn old shoes with her beautiful new stockings. She tried on a pair of new boots. She held back her skirts and turned her feet one way and her head another way as she looked down at the shiny, pointed boots. Her foot and ankle looked very lovely. She could not believe that they were a part of herself. She told the young salesman that she wanted an excellent and stylish fit. She said she did not mind paying extra as long as she got what she desired. After buying the new boots, she went to the glove department. It was a long time since Mrs. Summers had been fitted with gloves. When she had bought a pair, they were always bargains, so cheap that it would have been unreasonable to have expected them to be fitted to her hand. Now she rested her arm on the counter where gloves were for sale. A young shop girl drew a soft leather glove over Mrs. Summers' hand. She smoothed it down over the wrist and buttoned it neatly. Both women lost themselves for a second or two as they quietly praised the little gloved hand. There were other places where money might be spent. A store down the street sold books and magazines. Mrs. Summers bought two costly magazines that she used to read back when she had been able to enjoy other pleasant things. She lifted her skirts as she crossed the street. Her new stockings and boots and gloves had worked wonders for her appearance. They had given her a feeling of satisfaction, a sense of belonging to the well-dressed crowds. She was very hungry. Another time, she would have ignored the desire for food until reaching her own home. But the force that was guiding her would not permit her to act on such a thought. There was a restaurant at the corner. She had never entered its doors. She had sometimes looked through the windows. She had noted the white tablecloths, shining glasses, and waiters serving wealthy people. When she entered, her appearance created no surprise or concern, as she had half feared it might. She seated herself at a small table. A waiter came at once to take her order. She ordered 6 oysters, a chop, something sweet, a glass of wine, and a cup of coffee. While waiting to be served, she removed her gloves very slowly and set them beside her. Then she picked up her magazine and looked through it. It was all very agreeable. The tablecloths were even more clean and white than they had seemed through the window, and the crystal drinking glasses shined even more brightly. There were ladies and gentlemen who did not notice her, lunching at the small tables like her own. A pleasing piece of music could be heard, and a gentle wind was blowing through the window. She tasted a bite, and she read a word or two, and she slowly drank the wine. She moved her toes around in the silk stockings. The price of it all made no difference. When she was finished, she counted the money out to the waiter and left an extra coin on his tray. He bowed to her as if she were a princess of royal blood. There was still money in her purse, and her next gift to herself presented itself as a theater advertisement. When she entered the theater, the play had already begun. She sat between richly dressed women who were there to spend the day eating sweets and showing off their costly clothing. There were many others who were there only to watch the play. It is safe to say there was no one there who had the same respect that Mrs. Summers did for her surroundings. She gathered in everything, stage and players and people, in one wide sensation. She laughed and cried at the play. She even talked a little with the women. One woman wiped her eyes with a small square of lace and passed Mrs. Summers her box of candy. The play was over, the music stopped, the crowd flowed outside. It was like a dream ended. Mrs. Summers went to wait for the cable car. A man with sharp eyes sat opposite her. It was hard for him to fully understand what he saw in her expression. In truth, he saw nothing, unless he was a magician. Then he would sense her heartbreaking wish that the cable car would never stop anywhere, but go on and on with her forever.
That's all the time we have today. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver.